This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Not coming in tomorrow, as far as I know. We are closing. We have most of the month closed. We're finishing up on a few other things. All that's going well. It's been a good week. It's been a little bit of a long week. Because I'm just plowing through documentation, trying to get a handle on the next big project that we're going to do, the next big paperless expense project we're going to do. And I'm this last one we did, I kind of got blindsided a little bit in something called freight, using freight. Because how the calculations were done are complicated. And there's a whole bunch of reasons that they are done that way, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't remember whether I've talked about that or not, but we were in a meeting and everything was going fine and we were all good. And then there was this sigh from one of the users, and then the user said, "I suppose we should talk about freight." And it wasn't long after that, I was like, okay. So I'm trying to keep that from happening again. You know, I'm trying to get ahead of it and reading through the document that they've put together. That's 614 pages of detailing how all this stuff is done from an accounting perspective. And I've been trying to isolate down what we need to do in this next phase. So the week's been a little long because I've, you know, been just pounding my head against that stuff. But that's okay. It's been a good week. All is well. Let's see. Writing. I did finish up my writing sprint. My first writing sprint of book 13. I did get that done. I did get to 90,000 words. So that was the goal. And because it was 9 weeks, 10,000 words a week. So that was all taken care of, and yay. So that went well. And I think the book's fine. You know, there's some interesting stuff in it, and there's a chance to have some interesting discussions about different things in it. Still have very little idea of exactly where or how far this book is going to go, although it's not, I don't think it's going to quite go as far as I thought it was, which is fine. The last half that I wanted to do, I'll do in the next book. You know, we'll take it step at a time and we'll go from there. Still don't really have a handle on what I'm going to do for the epilogue, but that's okay. That'll come too. So we'll be all right there. And so we're puttering along. Family is good. All is well. We're staying healthy. Just trying to be careful as far as the whole COVID-19 thing goes. Do not get Lynette, my beloved wife, infected. So I'm trying to be careful and doing my mask thing. I'm still working on costumes and things. I thought, you know, 2020, what in the world kind of a year is this? I thought the least I could do in 2020 is try to provide people an opportunity to smile a little bit. So I am making a push this year, especially since I got a $1,200 stimulus check from the government. I am making a push this year. I'm using that and supplementing it with some other funds, making a push to do something every week. I've been accused of that already multiple times, and I've had to say, well, it's not every week, but yeah, it's pretty much every week now. So this week, tomorrow is National Donut Day. So I've got that pretty well put together. I've just got a few just tiny little things to take care of. So we got to go home this afternoon, this evening, and get it all on and just see what are the few little tiny things. It's one of those sad things. I have this big inflatable donut that looks like it has a bite taken out of the side. And then I have another cushion that's a donut that has a bite taken out of the side. And one was supposed to be pointing to the right, and one was supposed to be pointing to the left. And I did the cushion one, which is attached to another cushion that looks like a donut around my neck, and did all the sewing, got it all on, put it all on. And I was like, ah, it's pointed the wrong way. So I'm going to undo the magnetic latch that I've got on the inflatable donut and rotate it, get that done. But it's a minor thing. It's just held on by tape. And so I just pull the tape off and redo it. And just a few little minor things like that. But we'll get the whole thing on and we'll see how it goes. I am going to breakfast with a friend tomorrow. So that'll be fun. We're going to a place we've never been before. We'll see how the whole National Donut Day goes there. And then I think I'm going to go ahead. I wasn't going to, but I think I am. I'm just going to go down to the car licensing place and get my car license renewed. Oh, no, maybe I'm not. Because that's a little sad thing, because supposedly you can renew online, but you can't renew online if you're overdue. Okay, so I was supposed to get my car renewed at the end of April. Fine. Except the government shut down all the inspections because they said it was non-essential, and registering cars was non-essential, renewing your license plate. So I couldn't get it done. So then they finally opened it back up and they said, okay, well, we're going to give you 2 months grace then. So as long as you get it done by June 30th, you're fine. So I got all my inspections done, got my car repaired so I could get the inspections finished, hopped on last night, go to the website, try to register, and it says, oh, you're expired. You can't renew online. You have to go to the office. Like, what? What? So I may take the stuff with me and just try to get it done tomorrow. Because that might be fun. That might be fun, going to the licensing office dressed up in all donut stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, so that's all going fine. Family is going fine. Writing's going fine. Work is going fine. It's fine. Everything's good. Everything's good. I didn't actually prepare any notes for today. Because I probably, like most other people who don't just completely ignore the news, have been aware of the stuff that's going on in the country. I will have to say there was one I felt fairly humorous posting. On Facebook, in light of COVID-19 and all of the rioting over George Floyd. I sure hope I got that name right, because if I didn't, that would be bad. And the comment on Facebook was, did we miss the murder hornets? I feel like we skipped over the murder hornets because there was that whole thing of COVID-19 and then supposedly murder hornets were showing up on the West Coast. Oh man, what a year 2020 has been. Goodness. I don't know if you heard, but there was actually a large solar flare as well from the sun after a period of quiet for almost 2 years now. There was this fairly major solar flare. Thankfully, I don't think it was pointed at us, but because that's the other thing. If we get a major solar flare, it's going to knock out all the electrical systems. Oh, glory, glory, glory. So, you know, of course, there's been all kinds of rioting. There's been this terrible, terrible event where you have a police officer, you know, with his knee on another man's neck and the man dies, and it's just terrible. It's terrible. And that's just erupted in race riots. Starts, of course, things start out as just protests, and then it moves into riots, and then it moves into looting, and there are a lot of really well-meaning people who are doing all these posts and supposedly these show of solidarity by doing things like Blackout Tuesday, where you're supposed to change your Instagram profile and your Facebook profile and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I've just been watching all these things. And I was just going to find something to talk about today and just talk about it. And then I thought, you know, everyone else is putting in their 2 cents. Maybe I should just put in my 2 cents on all this. Because it has gone on for a long time now. And this is a recurring theme, unfortunately. And there's all kinds of people who have all kinds of opinions as to what the reality here is and what should be done, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, you know what, just for posterity, just to put down a stake and say, this is how I'm feeling about this right now. This is how I'm thinking about this right now. Not to say that I won't eventually come to the point where I think, wow, that was dumb. You should have been thinking about it a new way, because certainly we all adjust our thinking over time. We all adjust our conceptions, our preconceptions, how we see others, etc., etc. But me personally, I think that it's always good to go back and review the basics. What are the basics about life? What do those basics have to say about race and race relationships? One of the really wondrous things about the Christian belief system is how relevant it is after thousands of years. The true Christian belief system. I'm not talking about stuff that was obviously cultural, that got embedded in. I'm talking about stuff that Jesus said. And what's fascinating about the stuff to me that Jesus said is that, first of all, it was counter. It was counter to the culture of his day. So the things that he is saying is not something that people of that time would say. So, for instance, he says, you say that it's wrong to commit adultery. But I'm telling you that if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery. Now, that concept was foreign in Jesus' day. That was what? What do you mean that what happens in your mind is the important thing? And just as a sidebar, there have been a whole lot of people who are have tried to figure out what does lust mean when Jesus says you have lust in your heart. I think I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before. Sometimes I forget what I've talked about because I talk with friends. And to me, figuring out when you are lusting is not hard at all. It's not hard at all. And the reason it's not hard at all is because we as men have a very specific response. There's a turtle trying to make it across the road. He's a snapping turtle too. He's one of those ones, and a car is coming and the car is trying to swerve to miss the turtle. It's turtle migration season. We as men have a very specific response when our bodies are ramping up for insemination. And I think if you're looking at a woman and none of that has happened, that's not lust. I think we as men can't look at a woman and say, wow, thank you, Jesus, that you have made such beauty in the world. And it's fine. Now, if you keep staring at her and then your body starts ramping up to inseminate her, well, okay, that's lust. Anyways, that's a sidebar. So Jesus says, look, you say if you commit adultery, that's wrong. I tell you, you commit lust in your heart, that's the same as adultery. That's against the culture. And yet, that statement is so relevant even today. Jesus made that statement before we had internet, before there was photography, before there were movies, before there were adult sites that you can just click on something and get it. Jesus said, yeah, right. It's not whether you're actually going out and having intercourse with a woman in the real world. It's what's happening in your mind. It's absolutely relevant for today. It's a marvelous thing. Really marvelous. Completely against the current culture at that time. So Jesus is asked, what are the greatest commandments? And Jesus says, well, what's the greatest commandment? Jesus says, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, which wasn't against the culture at the time. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, that's not necessarily against the culture of the time either. Love your neighbor as yourself. Because the Ten Commandments, of course, has a whole thing, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, you shall not kill, so love your neighbor as yourself wasn't that much of a foreign concept, although when Jesus says love your neighbor as yourself, he says show agape to them, which is, that's a big commitment. Agape is, it's self-sacrificial love. It's a big commitment. But Peter shows the kind of side hustle, sidestep that Peter's culture was doing to get around that idea. And when Peter says, who is my neighbor? Of course, out of that, Jesus tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. And he basically says, well, everybody's your neighbor. The parable of the Good Samaritan, I'm using that parable in the current book. It's tough. That is tough to actualize that out in your life. But that's a whole other topic. So Jesus has this very simple human-to-human relationship standard. Your relationship to God should be that you love Him, full-blown agape with all your heart, soul, and strength. Your relationship to your neighbor, i.e. your fellow human being, should be that you love them as well. That's very relevant for today. I'm getting my mail. One moment. That's extremely relevant for today. And we'll get back to that in a minute. But let's see if we can kind of deconstruct a little bit and get back to the important pieces of the dynamic of what is happening in the world today. And what's useful, ultimately, in my opinion, and what is not useful, ultimately, in my opinion. So, I got my mail, I'm pulling into my garage. But let's see where we are with this. Let me get my car parked here, and then we'll just chat. So, I think the first thing that's important to understand in this, I'm going to go ahead and roll down the windows. In fact, never mind. I was going to back up because it's really lovely. I tell you what, hold on. I'm putting the wind screen on the top of this, so it's going to make noise here for a second. So sorry. Okay, there we go. Because now I can back up because it's a gorgeous day out there. So let me back up and we can listen to the birds a little bit and we can chat here. And this will be lovelier. So I think it's important to understand, first of all, that as I have talked about in the past, we do have this collection of subsystems that is down at the base, deep within us. If you want to call it the lizard brain, or you want to, that's fine. And we share these subsystems across all the mammals, and we share them with other forms of life on Earth, and they do their jobs really, really well. And we've talked about some of them. We do have this subsystem within us that is trying to calculate threats to our own survival, whether you want to call it the fear subsystem or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's not hunger, it's not thirst, it's not pleasure, it's not pain. Maybe it's pain. Maybe there's some things. But it seems to be able to calculate danger, what we would class as danger. And it tries to protect us from danger. So it takes input, tries to figure out, is this something I should fear? Is it something I should back away from? Is it something I should attack? It's running all those calculations. And, you know, one of the ways that is useful for me to understand that this exists is there have been times in the past when a dog has charged at me. And if you understand there's a subsystem in that dog that is calculating danger, and that dog is only attacking because it believes that it has the upper hand, you can take advantage of that subsystem by pulling yourself up to your full height, standing your ground, squaring. And then, in my case, I put on the big voice, which I do have a big voice when I need to have a big voice. Drop the pitch on my voice, get some volume behind it, and shout at the dog. And it's amazing. I mean, dog might be at a full charge, but you square your shoulders and you shout at it. And you set your face and you look straight at that dog, most of the time that dog is going to come to a screeching halt and then start looking at you, trying to evaluate what is the threat level. Well, we have that same type of subsystem within us. We're constantly trying to gauge what is the threat level. And that's a good subsystem. It leads to our survival. It contributes to our survival. That is a good subsystem. But unfortunately, it is a subsystem that can be compromised by the flesh, just like our other subsystems can be compromised by the flesh. And in fact, I've thought for the last few days, maybe the last week or so, I've thought that maybe one of the ways to try to come up with a functional description of sin is to say that sin is the result of the flesh corrupting one of our basic amoral subsystems. Now, I should say as a caveat very quickly that sin per se, if you take what the Apostle Paul said, sin per se is something that has been dealt with from a legal justification standpoint. Because I think Paul was telling the truth, and he was not joking, in 1 Corinthians 5 when he talked about the message of reconciliation. And he said, this is the message of reconciliation. I think it's 2 Corinthians 5:19, that God in Christ Jesus was reconciling, past tense, was reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting men's sins against them. So when I talk about sin, it is not in any sort of condemning way, because we've all sinned, we've all come short. That's our definition, missing the mark. Hold on a minute. This is my music minister calling, and this is important. Okay, I'm back. Sorry, that was my music minister. We're doing a bunch of upgrades. We're trying to get ready for do live cast as in addition to the service simultaneously, and they had to upgrade some software and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And I should have made a note where I was in this whole discussion because I am on hour 46 of a fast here. So I'm a little underpowered, but that's okay. I get to eat in 2 hours. Booyah! Okay. So we have a subsystem. It is corruptible. Perhaps a definition that we could have of sin is when our flesh corrupts one of our subsystems to destruction. So, definition of sin, missing the mark, that's a little bit nebulous, but we need to be aware of the fact that God has reconciled the world to himself and he no longer counts them their sins against them. That's what Paul says. You can interpret that any way you want to. I interpret it to what Paul says. So it's not a matter of, when I talk about sin, it's not a matter of pointing fingers. It's not a matter of condemnation. It's a matter of saying, okay, there is destruction in sin. And one of the ways that we can come up with a functional definition of sin is when your flesh takes what is an amoral, basic, valuable, functional subsystem and pushes it towards destruction. So hunger is a good example. If the flesh corrupts hunger and causes you to overeat and overeat and overeat and indulge in gluttony, and that creates destruction because that leads to obesity. And you can go through that with all of the subsystems. This danger subsystem, and this is getting long like it always does, so I'm going to push through this quickly. This danger subsystem, one of the outgrowths of this, when we are making evaluations of what will put me in danger, what should I fear, those kind of things. Part of that subsystem in the identification of those threats, one of the things that the flesh does with that is it pushes hard this concept of us versus them. Us versus them. Because I'm safe with us, but them are dangerous. So I should fear them. I should be ready to fight them. I should treat them differently than I treat us. And when Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself, what he was really saying was that treat everyone, all human beings, with kindness, with generosity. And what Peter was trying to do when he skirted around the issue with the question of who is my neighbor, he was trying to keep those boundaries of us versus them. you know, when it says that Jesus knew he needed to go through Samaria. It's another one of these cases where his disciples are going in to buy something at a local town, and Jesus is sitting there, and a woman comes out to the well, and Jesus goes against culture because he speaks to her, and she's shocked. Not only is she a woman and he speaks to her, she's a Samaritan. And Jews considered them they and not us. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, they are not others. They are they, not us. And that, when I look at all the events that have been happening over the last week, and unfortunately this is a cyclical thing and it keeps coming up, what's at the core of it for me is this subsystem that is getting corrupted. And there are a couple of things that build out of that. And one of them is that we are all suffering from this. Because this subsystem that we have to see danger, to identify danger, there's nothing wrong with that subsystem. That's a good subsystem. It helps us pay attention. It helps protect us. But where that subsystem goes bad is when the flesh takes it and corrupts it and starts whispering of, oh, that person is this and that, and then starts dividing us into us versus them. I know I've told this story before, but it's important. Because I try to make a point that when I am around anyone who is different than me in terms of race, that I address them with respect, that I greet them with kindness, that I give them a pleasant smile, that I look them in the eye, treat them as human beings. I try to treat everybody but human beings, but I make a little extra effort if it's anyone who is substantially different than myself. So that would, in, you know, if I'm going to use all the terms of the day, which I'm not thrilled yet, but it's white, heterosexual, cisgender male. Okay, if anybody is sort of outside that group, I try to do my best to greet. And the things that I remember from those encounters is that as I do that, I often get smiles back. I often get greetings back. Vast majority of the time that happens. I get greetings back. I get smiles back. My favorite example was out in San Jose, and I've said this before, and I'll just try to do this quickly. I'm out in San Jose. My wife, we're visiting my brother. My wife finds a cheaper hotel. Looks fine. Pictures look fine. We have dinner with my brother. He says, so where are you staying? And we tell him, and he says, oh, wow, that's down in Center City. Is that bad? Well, you know, it's just, you know, we don't go down into Center City much. We're like, okay, we get there. The hotel has bars on it, you know, on the windows. It's barred up, you know, passkey getting in, the whole bit. It's like, okay, well, next morning I have to go get my laundry done. There was a laundromat right around the corner. It was perfect. I just packed everything. My backpack went around there. There was not a white face in that entire laundromat, which is just fine because that's the way I grew up in the Philippines. You know, that's fine with me. It doesn't bother me a bit. I just sat in my little corner and typed on my little computer, and when I'd look up and people would be staring at me like, what are you doing in here? I'd just grin and nod, and they'd kind of smile, and we'd go back to doing our things. But as I come out of the hotel, and I'm walking down the sidewalk, and I'm getting ready to turn half, you know, it's just a quarter of a block because the hotel's on the corner, and I'm on the outside of the wall that's around, the little small wall that's around the hotel, and I'm getting ready to turn the corner, and there's a man coming towards me who's Hispanic, and he's got his game face on, you know, his expression is hard, and he's walking, you know, kind of pumped up a little bit. You can tell he's projecting this very kind of masculine image, and I'm coming up to him, and I got my backpack on, and then I look over him and looks at me, and I say, "How are you today, sir?" And his whole expression changes. And he said, "Good, how are you?" I said, "I'm doing well." And he smiles, and I smile, and we go on our way. And we go from this hard, dangerous expression to this open smile, instantaneously. And see, I remember that. That's an experience that I can draw on. That when I see that hard, closed, quote-unquote, dangerous expression in my mind, it's no longer, "Oh, that's dangerous." Now it's just, "I haven't said hello to him yet." And that, in a microcosm, really, I think, foundationally, is the problem. We all have this subsystem that's getting corrupted by the flesh, and it's peeling us apart into us versus them, against the command of Christ to love our neighbors as ourselves. And anything that supports and strengthens that boundary of us versus them, I think, is not beneficial. And I think this rush to judgment to say this was racially motivated, I think this rush to judgment to call America a racist country, I think this rush to judgment to define all the protesters as bad people when protesting is our right, I think this rush to judgment to not attempt to have any understanding of what the looters and the rioters have been through in their life experience, I think all those things enhance the us versus them. And honestly, all of the conversations that have gone back and forth, and all of the arguments that have gone back and forth, and all the people who are trying to explain on Facebook why you just don't understand your privilege, and you know, you don't understand this, and it's all that us versus them, us versus them, us versus them. And I think in the midst of all that, we can absolutely count on the fact that the flesh in all of us is going to try to use that to amplify us versus them, as opposed to us using language like we. Yes, we all have this tendency within us. And yes, it's a horrible thing when one human being does to another human being what the police officer did to George Floyd. And I really hope I have that name correct. I should have looked it up. Yes, it's a horrible thing. But the thing that caused the incident in the police officer was his flesh, and we all have that flesh. And that should give us all pause to say, what can I do more to help keep that flesh under control? Because I am capable of that if I let my flesh get out of control. One of the things that's been interesting to watch has been this call for Blackout Tuesday. So people were going to change their profiles to black, and then they were going to hashtag everything BLM or Black Lives Matters. And I have friends who did that. I did not. Because I think that's part of us versus them. Because, of course, what the flesh is going to do after you change your profile to black and that kind of thing is then you're going to start looking around to see, well, did my other friends do that? No. And I know people have a lot of reasons maybe for doing that. But I think the flesh can come in and take that and even corrupt it. And it's been fascinating to watch because, in fact, enough people did it and enough hashtags showed up that there were some other people then that were getting upset that so many people were doing that because the people, the us that they felt really deserved to be heard in all of this were getting drowned out by the noise of people using the hashtag too much. And then they were saying, look, all you people, stop it. Stop hashtagging. You know, BLM, stop hashtagging Black Lives Matter because we can't hear the people we're supposed to have. You know, it's us versus them, us versus them, us versus them, as opposed to us just saying, you know, isn't it unfortunate that the flesh has caused such destruction? Is it an unfortunate? And shouldn't we just recognize that this was an individual who killed this man because he let his flesh possess him? And we all participants in that because we're all dealing with the same flesh. And shouldn't we then repurpose in our lives and discuss how what's really needed here is for us to return to the concept that is the long-lasting fundamental concept, love your neighbor as yourself. That's really it. Love your neighbor as yourself is the solution for all of this. For understanding the reactions to this, for understanding why people would want to protest, for how easy it is for the flesh to get out of control and for those protests to turn into rioting, and then how easy it is for the flesh to trick people and turn that then over into looting. I mean, I believe in law, okay? I think we have laws, and I think if people violate those laws, I'm all for the police arresting them and for them to be tried. I think our laws very much in cases have been applied to enhance us versus them. I think there have been inequities and injustices in our laws, and I would like to see those resolved. But I think the concept, the fundamental concept that we have to get to is love your neighbor as yourself, because that's really the only thing that can break down us versus them. This has gone really long. But I have one more confession to make. And the confession that I have to make is that when it comes to us versus them, my greatest struggle that I have with the flesh, and I have a purpose for bringing this up, obviously. I have a prejudice that I will confess to you. My greatest us versus them is Americans versus non-Americans. Because although I love this country and I am grateful for this country, and I am blessed beyond measure to have grown, been a part of this country and have citizenship in this country. I did not grow up in this country. I grew up in the Philippines. And because of that, it's difficult for me to think of myself as an American. And the them in my concept is Americans. And at the base of my conceptualization of who I am not what I would classically judge an American. I'm like this third culture thing because I was a missionary kid. I'm not a Filipino, even though I grew up in the Philippines, and I'm not really an American. I'm this other thing that's an amalgam of the two. And the difficulty that I have is when people are projecting onto me and saying things, well, you just don't understand your white privilege. And my response is, oh, I understand my privilege. I've understood my privilege for a long, long time because I grew up in the Philippines. And my mom made sure that I understood my privilege and how blessed I was to have grown up in a home with two parents, with people who loved God, in a missionary family, with the opportunity to see how the rest of the world lived. And part of my understanding of my privilege came from the fact that we would go to eat in a restaurant, I've mentioned this before, called the Taza de Oro, the cup of gold. And we would sit in front of plate glass windows at times. And the little beggar Filipino kids would come and stand at the window and watch you eat. So I understand privilege. I've understood it for a long time. But what I also understand about privilege is that there is an American privilege. And when I hear people talking about how bad this country is and how unfair this country is and how, you know, complaining about all the things about this country, it's very easy for the flesh in me to exploit the us versus them in that context, because I can't turn down the aisle at Walmart, even still the cereal aisle, and see 150 plus different types of cereal and not think, what in this is obscene. Why do we need 150 plus types of cereal when I've seen how the rest of the world lives? When we were in Fiji, there was a little grocery store there with really tight aisles, and they had three kinds of cereal. And they were, at that time, this was the 1990, it was 1990, you know, they were $7, $8 a box for normal size boxes, not the family version. And so it's very easy for me to have a different context. And my context of us versus them that I have to protect myself against is American versus non-American. And that, of course, cascades too easily when I'm seeing rioting and looting and protests and things. But I just keep reminding myself that it's just all an outgrowth of a subsystem that's been corrupted by the flesh. And that the true answer to all of this, the true answer, is love your neighbor as yourself. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.